Sandbox Radio.
There, but for the grace of God, goes Jimmy Connors. By Tina Rowley.
In November of 1982, during my freshman year of high school, I went with a group of friends down to the Seattle Center to watch an exhibition match between Jimmy Connors and Bjorn Borg. I wasn't a tennis fan, but I went where my friends went, and that day we were going to some tennis. What I didn't know was just how tennis I was about to get. We were seated in the northeast corner of the arena, right behind a ball boy. After one grueling volley, Bjorn Borg lost an important point to Jimmy Connors.
Oh! Love 40, set point.
He turned back to our ball boy to get a ball, and Bjorn Borg and I made eye contact. I shrugged and tipped my head sideways, smiling like, hey, what are you gonna do? And Bjorn Borg mimicked my move and shrugged and smiled right back to me like, hey, what am I gonna do? I was electrified. We had communicated. I suddenly adored both Bjorn Borg and tennis itself. The bag of Skittles I was clutching became the Shroud of Turin. I put it in the clear pencil bag in my notebook where I would see it every day and didn't move it for the rest of the year. From that point on, it was go. I was changed. I became a 24/7 all-tennis establishment. It's important to stop and note that I have the ability to become a little obsessive. Every so often, I imprint on something like a baby duckling, and I suckle it until I realize that I'm not, in fact, ingesting the meaning of life, and I eventually let go. But until that time comes, I am latched on and no sense can be talked into me. I thought of Bjorn Borg all year and wondered if he thought of me.
Who was that adorable woman who shrugged at me from behind the ball boy? She's so understanding, she relaxes me. She'd make a wonderful wife. She's not that small. And I don't care what anyone says. I love braces on women.
If I was given a homework assignment, I wrangled Bjorn Borg into it however I could. It would appear that I talked at length about Bjorn Borg to anyone who would listen, as 90% of the people who signed my yearbook that year found polite ways to beg me to stop.
Have a fun summer, Tina.
Keep playing tennis.
Maybe one day you'll be as good as...
And then a gigantic handwriting.
Bjorn Borg!
I subscribed to Tennis Magazine. I watched every match on TV that I could. And when spring came, I forgot that I hated playing sports. And I joined the school tennis team. Oh my God. I had to be in the throes of something deep to make that kind of move. All my life, I'd squirmed my way out of any unnecessary physical activity. Nobody in my family was an athlete. We were ethereal weaklings, and we competed on a daily basis to see who among us was the limpest and sickliest. Whoever won was showered with attention and sympathy, so it paid to be lame. I lied my way out of any activity in PE that intimidated me, which left nothing but crab soccer and the thing where you all get together in a big circle and wave a giant parachute around. But this tennis thing, this was all right. We'd line up in the gym after school and practice our strokes against the wall with our coach, Mr. Case, striding around and calling out adjustments.
Tina, don't grip your racket so tight.
Mr. Case was an adorable, chipmunk-faced man, so even if he yelled, he was never scary. And I was the worst person on the team, easy. I owned the bottom seat all season, except for one week where I beat my friend Sandy and enjoyed the second worst position for a few days, which gave me a case of disproportionate swagger. But if the team had been seated according to who was happiest, I would have been the top seed with a bullet. I was never discouraged by my poor play. If my racket made contact with the ball and made that foomp sound I adored, I was aces in my book regardless of the trajectory the ball made afterwards. If I didn't fault while I was serving, I felt like Martina Navratilova, Chris Everett Lloyd, and Carling Bassett all wrapped up in one. Carling Bassett, if you don't remember her, was the teenage sweetheart of American tennis back then. Maybe you saw her in the movie Spring Break. I know I did. She played a young tennis star trying to keep her eye on the prize, and Susan Anton played her mom. I'd say it belongs in any critic's top 20 tennis movies of the spring of 1983. And you can probably pick up a VHS copy on eBay if you'd like to check it out. While I regularly played intra-team matches to defend my bottom seed standing, my services were generally not called on when it came time for matches against other schools. But once, Sandy and I were called into the show for a doubles match against Roosevelt High School, whose worst two players would face off with the two of us on our own turf. I think you can safely say that this was not a majestic sporting match. This was not a display of the human form and its possibilities. Mr. Case had been yelling,
"Footwork!"
at me all season, which I dismissed, because as I saw it, you primarily played tennis with your hand. But these girls from Roosevelt took my theory to whole new levels. They seemed confused about their responsibilities on the tennis court, to the point where I wondered if they were maybe serving out some randomly generated tennis-themed detention for something. Sandy and I creamed them by merely moving our feet at all. When June came, and the end of school with it, my parents planned a family trip up to Orcas Island. We'd be spending a couple of weeks in our normal spot, which didn't have a TV. Those couple of weeks happened to correspond with Wimbledon, which I was going to have to miss. I feel for my parents when they delivered the news, for I shat my pants and lost my mind. It was the sob heard round the world. And they ended up bribing me to calm down with a Walkman, which I'd been lobbying for some time. The Walkman was pretty cool, I have to say. And the Police had come out with their album Synchronicity that year, which sounded extra bitchin' coming in both of my ears like that. I listened to it over and over, which unlatched my obsession mechanism and got it ready to pivot. When we came home from Orcas, it wasn't Bjorn Borg, but some kid named Boris Becker who had won Wimbledon.
Boris!
Who is this Johnny come lately? I'd never heard of him, and I'd been into tennis since November. The sport was going downhill. And Bjorn Borg, well, I had to ask myself, was he really here to stay? He was cool, sure. He was the Iceman after all. But Sting now, Sting was the king of pain. What girl doesn't love the king of pain? Ask any therapist. By fall, I was completely latched onto the Police, and I'd abandoned Bjorn Borg and tennis like a couple of ratty old teddy bears. Bjorn Borg was the Iceman? Please, I was the Iceman.
This segment of Sandbox Radio appeared in the episode Swing Time, recorded on June 16, 2014 at ACT Theater in Seattle, Washington. It was engineered by Christopher Stewart and Max Langley, with post-production by Dave Pascal. Sandbox Radio is produced by Leslie Law and Richard Zyman, with generous support from our audience and listeners like you.